Welcome to a WXPR special forum designed to shed light on a need for high-speed internet access and what communities, government, and private citizens are doing to provide more service. This is News Director Ken Kroll here at WXPR. Some have said having high-speed internet is equivalent to rural electrification in the 1930s, but it's also beyond that. While providing electricity to farmers meant keeping food coming to folks during the Depression, high-speed internet is viewed by many as the way for rural communities to grow and compete. It's an economic development issue, not just whether you can email your family or surf the web. In some parts of our listening area, fast internet is no problem. Here in Rhinelander, you have several options, but just a little ways out of town, the best that's available is dial-up. Tourism businesses say guests come from larger areas. They're used to faster speed internet, either by line or wireless, and then they come here and get frustrated. Some think more businesses would locate here if high-speed internet is available for large file distribution. But like in the days of rural electrification, there's a numbers problem. It costs big money to run a wire to just a few customers, and private companies are shy to invest when the return on investment is so low. Some communities have taken a leap forward, as we'll hear in a few minutes. Others are still trying to find a way to cost-effectively provide faster service. As a backdrop, some of the fastest commercial internet speeds are in places like Japan and Korea. With this as a backdrop, let me take a few minutes to introduce the panelists we have today. First, Don Sadlowski, civic government strategist, founder of the Northwoods Broadband Development Coalition, a super-regional entity committed to the transformation of Wisconsin north of Highway 29 into a nationally recognized high-speed internet economic zone, attracting businesses and resident workers from around the country. Don is past chair of the town of Three Lakes and also served as chair of the Economic Development Committee and the commissioner of the Three Lakes Plan Commission. He's also worked with Oneida County broadband committees. Don is currently board member for the Wisconsin Rural Partners, management team leader for the Public Service Commission's Link Wisconsin Region 2, and serves as a broadband development advisor to a wide range of public and private organizations. Tim Brown is a community resource development educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension, serving Oneida County. In the past, he served as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Dominican Republic and worked on economic development initiatives in Milwaukee's Menominee Valley. His current work includes helping citizens and leaders of Oneida County understand why technology matters. Robert Reardon is the Executive Vice President and Director of Corporate Development for Ensite, or you might know them as Cellcom. In his role, he looks through 6 months to 6 years ahead of where a company is today. Through his studies of mobile IP, for example, Ensite became the first company in the U.S. to provide the service. This knowledge, combined with his 30 years of telecom experience, allows him to speak on a number of subjects, both nationally and internationally. Also joining us, Representative Rob Swearingen was elected to the State Assembly in 2012 and is currently serving his first term. Lifelong resident of Rhinelander, Rob attended Rhinelander Catholic Central as a youth and is a 1981 graduate of Rhinelander High School. He and his wife, Amy, own and operate the Algem Dinner Club here in Rhinelander. And Joni Theobald has been the Director of Education and Workforce for the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians since 2010. Her prior work experience includes consulting for various federal departments in Washington, D.C. on grant and project evaluations and teaching. She's resident of Lac des Flambeaux and is representative of the tribe on health, policy, and economic advisory committees. Well, we welcome all of you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Well,
thank
you. Let's start by asking Don Sadlowski, what's the general state of broadband expansion and adoption in the North Woods, and who is involved in the effort, and how is it impacting economic development so far?
Well, Ken, the general state is respectable and off to a good start, but we still have a long way to go. The seeds that we started planting in some cases 7 years ago now have started to bear fruit, and that's an encouraging sign. The main message we've been bringing to units of local government, chambers of commerce, economic development corporations, and to the business community has been step one of the building community capacity model, which is change and commit. They have to change their way of thinking about broadband and then commit the resources to making expansion and adoption happen. Oneida and Vilas counties, for example, each have several towns that are well on the path to quality broadband service for all of their residents and businesses, and we've been expanding that message to the entire area north of Highway 29. Now, since that's nearly the northern one-third of the state of Wisconsin, it's involved a huge collaboration of entities and organizations at the local, county, regional, super-regional, and state levels. And this would include, for example, the Oneida County Economic Development Corporation, Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation, the Public Service Commission by means of the Link Wisconsin Initiative, The University of Wisconsin Center for Community Technology Solutions, and even the State House in Madison. Just last week, in fact, Tim Brown and I met for nearly an hour and a half with Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish in her office in Madison to ensure the executive branch is firmly behind the mission and committed to bringing the state broadband's playbook to life. You know, the grant program for broadband development that the governor included in his biennial budget was a huge step in the right direction, but we now have to make sure we actually do something constructive with that funding. As far as the economic benefits of the local expansion, we're already seeing seasonal residents with second homes here. And by the way, that's a lot of homes in the five-county area, spending anywhere from weeks to months longer in the Northwoods because the broadband that they can now access from those second homes allow them to telecommute or otherwise work from home. And a growing number of these second homeowners have actually made the permanent move here to the Northwoods. In fact, I just met another one at our local Lions Club meeting last week. This couple is building a new home on Virgin Lake in Three Lakes. He's a supply chain manager for a paper company in the Fox River Valley, and he's now going to telecommute from home to work. And, you know, every time that happens, we've just created a new job here because that five- or six-figure salary is going to be spent in the Northwoods, not down south. So I'd say we're off to a solid start, but clearly we've got a lot of work ahead of us as we continue to spread this message in a much larger area north of Highway 29.
Okay. Next question goes to Representative Swearengin. Governor Walker has said he foresees a public-private partnership as a way to give priority to large geographic areas without broadband service, especially here in rural areas like your district. And that's why he put 4.3 into a grant program for broadband development. How do you foresee this grant program being utilized over the next 5 years in public-private partnerships in rural districts like this one?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the invitation. This is a good discussion. And this has been going on for quite a while since even been on the campaign trail. And I met with the governor briefly about several subjects, broadband being one of the priority subjects that we talked about. In addition, the lieutenant governor was in the Rhinelander recently for a business roundtable where Don attended, and we had some good discussion there. Then, of course, he followed up in Madison. And the governor and the administration, this administration, is committed to broadband. And we talk about the map PSC and the map for Link Wisconsin. And you'll notice, I brought a map here, although I obviously we're on radio, but the entire yellow area of that map is my 34th Assembly District. So it is a huge, huge issue for people in my Assembly District, specifically working with the people from Economic Development and Grow North. And these people were all committed, and I'm in that fold, to try to get as much of that grant money into northern Wisconsin, into the 34th Assembly District. And we're looking forward to working with people like Cellcom to get this job done. So,
and, you know, jumping in there, Ken, the grant money that's been put aside here, $4.3 million over the course of 5 years, that's going to be $500,000 per year. Public Service Commission will administer those funds, and they're getting all the final details together right now, but it's targeted for communities that have two or fewer providers. So either they have no provider, one, or two. If they have more than that, they won't even qualify for the grant funds, which guarantees virtually that the underserved and unserved areas are going to be the communities that get those. So take, for example, in the representative district, Florence, the county of Florence, huge county, geographically the size of Oneida. Oneida County has 35,000 people. Florence has like 5,000 people, and they're spread out over very large distances. One can easily envision that a county like that would be one that could qualify possibly for that grant money.
Okay. One thing, when you're using words like PSC and some of these acronyms, spell it out for folks, because there's a lot of them when you're talking about this. Next question is, Rob Reardon, what's the provider community's perspective on the opportunity for public-private partnerships, and what are some kinds of projects that are achievable in some of these rural communities?
Well, it's interesting. When you started out, you talked about rural electrification taking place back in the 1930s. And it was actually out of that very action that the rural telephone started. What happened was the government recognized in the beginning that trying to get telephone service to rural America just wasn't going to happen. It just couldn't happen on its own. There was no money in it. The big cities might have five or six phone companies back before they went to the monopoly idea, and rural America had nothing. So what the government came along with is they started the REA, Rural Electrification Administration, and they would loan money or grant money to rural telephone companies to provide services in areas that were unable to get service on their own. Then we came along with the Universal Service Fund. And again, the government, as a partnership with the industry, came back and said, what we want to do is we're going to force you to collect a little bit of money from everybody that has telephone service and put it in a pool. Now think about this. You know, you're taking money out of my pocket to pay somebody else. Why is that good? Well, we've discovered in third world countries it's very good. If you just let the haves continue to have and the have-nots not get anything, you're going to end up with an entire society that does not grow. But in the U.S., what we did was we took a little bit from everyone, put it into a pool, and then those that couldn't afford it or were high-cost companies, as they called it, were able to pull some money out of that and could build an infrastructure. We now have a very good infrastructure for telephone service. Now, as we move into broadband, it's a little different, and we have to come up with a way to make that work. And again, for a network to be valuable, for a network of phones or of internet to be valuable, it has to reach everyone. If you leave anybody off the grid, you're not really having an effect communications. It's just a one-way voice out there by radio, which a great medium, but doesn't give you that two-way communications that you need. So we're looking at it and saying that if we can partner with government agencies, with groups like the Lac des Flambeaux and the county governments and otherwise, to find ways in which we can move in and help to provide the service, we've got the experience. You know, the interesting thing about it is that I was talking to my CFO earlier today, and I said, Mark, I'd be kind of curious what would be a good ratio to talk about it. Well, we're going to be spending about 1/6 of what we plan to spend this next year for new additional stuff, and we're growing like crazy, but we're going to be spending about half of what we have in our total assets just in our operating budget this next year. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, and there's a lot of cost in putting it together. So as an example, if we're making, if we've got about a $400 million worth of assets, we're spending over $230 million that we're going to be spending this next year, that we just to run the company, just to provide the service, just to keep all the towers up, the microwave, and all of the fiber optic networks working for it. And I think a lot of the government agencies, as they get into this thing, they understand that there's a lot of cost getting into it, but then you've got to have enough money to make it survive afterwards. So we're looking at a partnership might be something where we can get a good boot start and a good bootstrap into it, but then in the same token, as we continue to roll it, it's got to be something that's self-supporting. No government wants to run something that doesn't support itself, nor does any private business. So that's how you get the private sector into it, is you give them a bootstrap, give them an opportunity to come in and help and work with them. But I think the other thing that happens is that rural communities know what they need better than any company outside the area. You take a company like Cellcom, we cover about 800 square miles of, or 800 fiber miles we have in our network. That's great, but an AT&T and Verizon are going to have, you know, a whole lot more than that. So where's our focus? Well, our focus is on the North Woods. But my focus is not on Three Lakes. It's on the North Woods. It's where we serve our area. But who knows Three Lakes better than Don? So if I want to know what is good for Three Lakes, I got to go to Don, and I will do that. And that's what we as business people have to do in the private sector, is we have to go to the people that are in the area and say, okay, what do you need? What is it that Tim with Vilas County, what do you guys need, Jody, what do you need, so that we can better know how to serve that? I think that your private sector, you've got a lot of people that are entrepreneurial that are going to do things. It just has to be that relationship. You have to get talking.
And Rob touches on a great point, okay, and a practical example with the town of Three Lakes and Cellcom. It doesn't always have to be money in terms of investment in infrastructure. Cellcom needed to expand their footprint in the North Woods. They were looking for locations that they can construct towers. Very often, local municipalities make it difficult, if not impossible, for a provider to come in, either through local ordinance saying that there's going to be no towers or they're restricted to a certain height. And one of the things that we've been talking about for the last 7 years is we need to make it easy to enable the providers to come in and help our communities. If we make it difficult, they're going to go where the path of resistance is less strict. So in the case of Three Lakes, we identified town property, got together with the Cellcom representatives and said, we want to make this happen. And that sure makes it a lot easier for a provider to come in and say, if you're offering up a piece of town property and we can put that up. Now, did we take a little bit of criticism? Sure, a lot of people don't like towers. Everybody hears the not in my backyard. But you know what? For the most part, those people want to stay in touch with their families. And so when those towers went up and we got through the initial criticism of, you know, oh boy, another tower in town, it's a great thing. So here's an example of a public-private partnership that really didn't involve the town investing money to build the structure. CellCom invested in that themselves, but we provided access to the land, and that's a huge thing.
And to that end, you take a private company then tries to look at how do we repay that, how do we make things work better. Over in Door County, we had a very difficult situation down by the waterfront because they've got these high ridges, and then people love to build right on the water. So what's our cell tower doing? We're sending signal right over the top of them. They can't reach them down below. Well, they had another problem. The fire and rescue people were running into a situation where they're down, they're trying to do a rescue, and they can't get their handheld walkie-talkies to get back. Their whole fire rescue is shot once they go off the ledge. So they came to us and they said, we've got a problem here. We can't get any kind of signal in here. And we said, well, how about if we were to take and go over to we went over to Chambers Island, which has no electricity, and we put a tower there. And they said, well, you can't because there's no electricity. And we said, well, actually, we have put in a green cell site elsewhere down around Algoma, and we're going to take and put up another one. So we put up, or I'm sorry, it was Anaco. We ended up putting up a tower, and that tower, the first thing we did 6 months before we turned on our own cellular stuff was we put a repeater for the signals. So the walkie-talkies from the fire and rescue talked to that tower and then talked back to the network. They had now, fire and rescue had service. We have no problem working with the sheriff's departments, the police departments, rescue squads, or anybody else. It all wins at the end of the day. We all get a much better service out of it.
And one more example of a public-private partnership, and Ken, is the town of Phelps in Vilas County. They have a budget of about $1 million each year, and their town board took it to the electors and committed to put $30,000 of that million into a fund to build infrastructure for broadband. Now, $30,000 out of $1 million budget is a significant portion of that budget. But they're able to partner now with a local provider, SonicNet, who has, like every other for-profit business, a return on investment plan. Okay, they've got a budget that says we have to have so many customers for every tower we build. But if the town of Phelps builds the tower and owns the tower, they can't be the internet service provider, but they can own the tower. And if they build that, then the number of customers that a provider like SonicNet goes for potentially 35 to maybe 3 or 5. And oh, by the way, the town of Phelps can give them the list of people that they can go sign up. So here's another way in which a local unit of government can appropriate some funds, build some structure, go to the provider and say, can we do this together? And surely, Rob, there have got to be other projects like that are achievable and doable in small communities in the Northwoods.
There really are, and there are a lot of very entrepreneurial spirits. I mean, you've got a number of people out here that are like SonicNet and others that are interested in providing the service. The technology is starting to come more and more available to it. We've just recently got wind of a new technology to allow us to offer a service or others to offer a service on it, and we're going to make that available to people. But it's the kind of thing like this that if you can work with the local municipalities who have a lot of infrastructure themselves, they have water towers, they have the land, as you've talked about, that makes the wireless possibilities. The other thing, of course, you run into is the right-of-ways. So when every time you try to put something in, everybody has to get an extra dime out of it, that's fine, but it simply means that you say, I'm going to have to go someplace else because I can't afford to go there. It's all part of the cost.
You're listening to a forum on broadband here on WXPR. And next, we're going to have a question for Joni Theobald. Here close to Oneida County, both the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa as well as Forest County Pottawatomie have been quietly building state-of-the-art fiber broadband networks on tribal lands. What do you see as the opportunities for the local tribal nations in areas of leadership, education, and collaborating outside the reservation when it comes to broadband expansion and adoption?
Well, thanks for inviting me here. Wow, I've been spending quite a bit of time on this past couple of years, but thinking about the leadership and where we're trying to go and what we're doing, and I can't speak on behalf of any of the other tribes or the tribe myself, but mainly from my department, the Education Workforce Development. But what we were finding is technology-wise, broadband, telephone services, we've been quite far behind, and it's really building that knowledge base, getting a full understanding of what are the capabilities, what do we have, how do we have the same shared goal we have in the Northwoods, how do we bring business, commercial business in just to keep our tourism alive. Again, you know, with the casino and Lake of the Torches, we have one of the largest, we're one of the largest employers. We are very interdependent here, and we rely on everyone having access to broadband and telecommunications, especially seasonal residents. So one of the things, you know, we look at leadership is we're building our fiber network. We're looking at the return of investment. What is our telephone service cost? Who are our providers? And Don, that was interesting, you know, talking about the public-private partnership, and I don't want to get too far off, but I think about, you know, as we go on this road to developing and building up, we're seeing about 51 spectrum holders over tribal lands, but though we have limited providers, and that speaks to access to spectrum, access to those frequencies, and what can we do to better have better use of them. So, I'm hoping, you know, and I haven't taken a real good look at this public-private partnership and what's all going to come out of it, but I hope, you know, as we explore these partnerships and these developments, we're really looking at best use of spectrum, especially over tribal lands and what that brings for the tribe, and, you know, federally, what does that mean? Because that kind of is a little different.
By spectrum, you mean radio frequencies.
Yes, radio frequencies. Thank you. So, again, back to leadership, it's been a real, it's been a journey of learning, journey of what are our technologies, what are, you know, what is the right-of-ways and the jurisdictions, and, you know, it brings on a whole other element when you have a tribal nation. One of the things in the past couple of years, working with Vilas County Economic Board, Don and Grow North and Nicolet College, is really exploring how do we leverage, how do we look at ourselves regionally, and it speaks to the collaboration. How could we leverage the sovereignty and the tribe for our region to really best serve the Northwoods? And I think that's a critical, it's a mission, it's something we always have to keep in mind, because we're in a unique situation, you know, with the ceded territories, that I think we don't look at it from an economic lens and a diversification of the Northwoods. And how do we, as up here in the Northwoods, use that to our best, to everyone's best benefit? And we have to keep going, especially in broadband. So, you know, the tribe, thinking with that in mind, building up our fiber, you know, we're looking at several different partnerships, public-private, and all, again, is the how do we bring business? How do we bring tourism? How do we best serve who are our residents? So, again, the leadership is very supportive of that. Again, the educational piece. One of the private-public partnerships that we've developed with Nicolet College and along with an engineering firm from southern Wisconsin is the apprenticeship program, and developing and building as we take on the feasibility study for the Northwoods, kind of Vilas, Oneida, and parts of Iron County, we're learning all the phases and the processes that need to take place, from the business development plan to meeting with town boards and, you know, formally, what is the permitting process? Are we looking at Celix? And, you know, it's just a huge undertaking. So, again, but we're going to have local people able to move into those if they become a job or if it becomes employment. At least they'll have some understanding, whether it's utility, whether it's spectrum, whether it's network operating centers. So, again, that's the critical importance in my mind for collaboration, leadership, and the whole educational piece. So,
and the tribe, as I recall, is in the process of doing some rather extensive survey work in along that line. Is that correct?
Yes. Right. Currently, the tribe, in partnership with Vilas County Economic Board, and now the town of Minocqua, is involved in a large feasibility study of the parts of Minocqua, Oneida County, Vilas, and Iron County. To just the undertaking is, what's the sustainability, what's the operation expense, and what is it going to take?
How long is that survey going to be going?
We've been moving in this direction for a couple of years, and many people are aware now that we have a large fiber network within Lac du Flambeau, and we'll keep moving. This feasibility could continue on as we add counties or townships. Right now, we're looking at a completion maybe about September.
Okay. And Ken, you know, Joni touches on a really important point, which has been a core message of the coalition north of 29 for the last couple of years, which is that broadband expansion and adoption is not the end in itself. It's the means to the end. The end is economic development and creation of job growth, okay? And so if you look at what Loc DeFlambeau is doing now and the leadership role that they have taken to say, you know, we're going to look beyond our borders and look regionally to help other communities, because when one of us wins in the North Woods, we all win. Not everybody's going to think that Minocqua or Loc DeFlambeau or Phelps is the best place to be, but they're going to land in a town, maybe in Boulder Junction, and one day, those people, because they have access to broadband and they can telecommute from home, and they're going to say, look at all those lakes down in this place called Three Lakes, and somebody's going to take a ride down there, and they're going to drive through town, and they're going to stop at Subway. So we all win when one community wins. And so taking this regional perspective that the tribe has done and doing this feasibility study across a two-county area, you know what it does? It creates a model. And what we found out in the last 7 years is that models work. When you can do the heavy lifting and go out and figure out what works and what doesn't work, and then bring back something that's replicatable and duplicatable to another county, you save them a lot of time, you save them a lot of energy. So Oneida County right now, Tim and I are on the new committee that's been formed that the county board has put into place, being administered under the auspices of the Oneida County Economic Development Corporation, to bring suggestions to the county board for broadband expansion and adoption, because the county board has committed to making Oneida County broadband countywide. So we look at what Loc DeFlambeau is doing. We're going to take a look at their feasibility study. They will save other counties a lot of time and energy in doing that, and then we'll team up together, because you've got a county here who wants to invest, a county there that wants to invest, and all of a sudden we've covered up a big part of the region. It's pretty neat.
Well, Tim, you've been kind of quiet, so let's let's ask you a question. It seems that there's still a lot of individuals and businesses alike that still really don't understand that broadband has already become part of the fabric of our daily life and commerce. How do we get the educational message about broadband out to both homes and businesses and into the communities?
Well, what those of us who spend every day thinking about these things sometimes forget is that this technology is so incredibly new, and this need is new. You know, the iPhone just had its sixth birthday earlier this year. The iPhone is a very new technology, and all of these ways we're doing business now, these ways we're doing education, high-speed internet, it's a new concept. And for communities, for businesses, for individuals who have been living their lives, doing business, doing education the same way for decades, these concepts are new, and they need some help coming along and learning the vocabulary of technology, learning what these concepts are all about. A guy named Mark Prinsky has written about digital natives and digital immigrants. Every child born today is a digital native. They're born into this world of screens and iPhones and iPads, and from an early age, they learn how to live in a world of technology. They know the language, they know the culture. The rest of us who had to learn these things as adults or as a little bit older people, we're digital immigrants. We're coming to this world for the first time, and we're having to learn the language. And what we at Extension here in Oneida County and across the state of Wisconsin are doing, we're helping the citizens of Wisconsin to learn the language. We're helping the digital immigrants with their transition. So there's two main needs we're encountering. The first is to help leaders, policymakers, understand how their communities can access higher speed internet, how they can do what Don did in Three Lakes, how they can reach out to providers like Rob, how they can build those relationships, what they need to do as a community to get the infrastructure in place. We at Extension are sitting down with leaders, we're having seminars, we're walking them through the vocabulary, helping them develop strategies. The second and even bigger need is to encourage adoption of technology. Here in Oneida County, our median age is about 10 years older than the median age for the state of Wisconsin as a whole. We're a little bit older in age here. We have more digital immigrants, so there's more need for education when it comes to this technology. So one project we're just starting here in Oneida County, we are loaning out technology kits to the libraries. We're providing them with iPads, we're providing them with some Android tablets, some Kindle readers, to help their staff learn how these things work, what the educational potential is of new technology. And we're hoping that when we can get every librarian in Oneida County trained in how to use this technology and how to teach it, they can then teach every patron of these libraries how to use this technology, how to adopt it. When we do that, when more people are comfortable with it, there's going to be more demand. There's going to be more citizens who want to subscribe to the services, and it's going to make it even easier for providers to come in and set up the infrastructure. So we're spending a lot of time as university employees thinking about education, how it relates to technology, and how we can really come alongside the citizens of Oneida County, the citizens of the Northwoods, and help them learn what they need to learn to move forward in this brave new world.
Well, Tim, to add to that, as you think about people learning about the technology, what you're really doing is it's like teaching a kid to speak. Once they learn how to speak, they start learning new things all on their own. It's just it becomes a watershed event for them. If they start understanding the technology, they really start understanding what they can or they don't know when they start to find things. We find that if I give people an app and I put it on their phone for them, they basically don't look at it. They don't really use it. And as a matter of fact, if I force them to use it, they're distracted by it and they get upset with me that I put it on their forced it down their throat. Yet in the same token, they may take that same app, and since they chose to use it and they went out and put it on themselves, they think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, so they get actively involved in it. So I applaud you for that activity. I think that's really where we have to go. But as we're talking about the whole concept of partnering, part of the group we have to do is that partnering is working with educators. The young people are learning how to do things so differently than I did. Colleges are and high schools are finding they're reversing the way in which they teach, and this is part of what broadband brings. I was talking to the head of it, or the system administrator for the Green Bay School District, and she was talking about the Khan Academy, the concept of turning education backwards. And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, kids do homework at school; they learn at home." I said, "You're kidding me." He said, "No." And I got a chance to listen to the founder of the Khan Academy. He described basically what they do is they put short 10-minute segments where they teach a particular math skill or geophysics, I don't know, but whatever it is that he's teaching that day, they teach this in a short 10-minute segment, and the kids master it. And then they come back to school the next day, and the teacher sees that that particular student looked at it once, and the next student looked at it 15 times and didn't seem to ever get it. Well, the teacher sits down with the one that sat there for 15 times and will work through them individually to learn it. So they're reversing the way they do it. But to do that, you need the broadband so you can watch the YouTube video that Khan has put out on the network. So Partners with Education is a key place to get this whole broadband going forward and why it's going to go. The other piece that we talked about earlier, though, and Ken was, Don was talking about, was that as we start to do the partnerships and we start to learn what's necessary in the area and we start to work with the different providers in the area, it's important to work with all the different providers. You've got Frontier Communications, has been here for a number of years as a provider before Rhinelander Telephone was here, and I knew the guys there, and it was a shame that they finally had to sell out, but you know, they had a local nature in it. But that's a group that has an interest in rural America. That's what their whole company is built on. So bring them into the picture. Bring in the local entrepreneur that we talked about earlier. Bring the Lac du Flambeau and bring in the cellular carriers, myself, and the major ones combined. And as long as somebody's willing to sit at the table, and that's the big thing, is making sure everybody shows up at the table. But if they are, get them involved. Then you are not going to leave any of the people alone at home either. You've got to make sure that everybody of the end users are involved, but also all of the providers are involved and all the government agencies as one group. I think you can really get a lot done.
Yeah, and Rob, you hit the nail on the head, and Tim touched on it too. One of the things we've developed over the last 7 years are these best practices for rural communities, and one of them is seeing providers as the friend, not as an enemy. There's this sort of natural reaction that, well, they want something. Well, sure they do. They want to provide service and make a profit. They're in business, okay? But how we enable that in the community is through cooperative exchanges, just like you talked about, Rob. And so the provider community, one of the things that businesses don't understand when we go in and talk with them is they need to make a reasonable profit on what they do. So you're thinking of expansion. You want to expand your footprint. You want to make it bigger. What the companies need to do is they need more people using that service, okay? And so we've got a direct role, as Tim said, in educating folks. They need to sign up. They need to take the service. not just because it's a good thing to do to make it all work economically, but as Tim will tell you, there's a lot of things that you're already can't do except for online, and these things have to do like with Social Security benefits and a lot of other things, unemployment. If you want to apply for a job, you're not going in and doing it on a piece of paper anymore. So folks need to understand from an educational point of view that broadband is not a want or a need, it's a requirement.
Yeah, we do spend quite a bit of time talking about how high-speed internet is not a luxury. This is not just something you have so that you can watch your movies a little bit faster. As Don said, Social Security is moving online. Veterans benefits are moving online. Kids in school nowadays, they go to school, they do their work, but when they come home, their homework is all web-based a lot of the time. So kids who live in rural areas who maybe have inferior access to the internet are behind kids who have better internet now when it comes to education. This is about giving the neediest people in our society, kids and the elderly, our veterans, about giving them equal access to the services they need to do what they can for our society.
And Ken, we talked earlier about that models work very well in this system. So what Tim touched on and what he's doing here by loaning these kits out to libraries is part of a program that's coming through Extension. About 2 years ago, I sat in Chancellor Dr. Ray Cross, who's head of Extension, his office, and said, wouldn't it be neat if we could find a way to leverage all 72 Conrad agents in the state to do something to advance this? Because they're your feet on the street. They're the people who are right there. Move fast forward 2 years, so the Center for Community Technology Solutions has a program called Broadband Bootcamp for its own personnel. Tim was through that boot camp. He is one of only six what are called digital leaders in the state of Wisconsin right now. With that came a stipend from the Extension that he's using to create these kits and to bring that educational message into the field. So that's become a reality. And here's another example of how a collaboration, I don't necessarily have to call it a public-private partnership, but a collaboration with the University of Wisconsin Extension can make such a difference. Oneida County is doing something that could really become a model, and then we can roll that out to other places. It's pretty exciting, Tim.
Yeah, and what's so exciting about this issue in general is that everybody has a stake in it. Private business is interested. The tribes are interested. Local government is interested at many levels. Private citizens are interested. Educational institutions. It's so exciting to go to these meetings and see who's interested, who's coming to the table. And it's really neat to be a part of such a wide collaboration.
One of the things I've noticed, being a part of these groups is, and we really focus, it is real critical, the education with the technologies, our leaders, but more importantly is the education of the utility, the regulations, the policies, as we develop and have these public-private investments or these grants or fundings coming along, because many times I think if you don't have the knowledge base of the technology that is being built out here in the Northwoods, there may be humidity affecting, there may be foliage. There's many of these companies are coming from southern Wisconsin up to an area that may be a little different. And what I'm seeing is the technologies that we're implementing might not necessarily be the best or the most innovative. We talk about upload and download speeds in our areas and some of the resorts and what they're unaware of. They're paying for six up and six down. Well, so, you go around and test these speeds, you'll see they get one up, maybe two down.
And things like leaves make a big difference.
It does. But again, that's on the company and their understanding to know you employ the right technologies. You look to use what's best for and not just to make a buck. Because right now, we talk about population. There is a model within return on investment of how many people I need to have in your area before I'm going to come and invest. It's great to have companies who are looking to say, that's not going to be our first and foremost priority, but we want to help this help the Northwoods. But again, is it going to be, or these kind of funds going to really examine what are they going to be required to report or offer.
You're listening to a broadband forum here on WXPR and our panel talking about a number of topics. Rob, I want to move over to you, Rob Swearingen. We're talking public-private. Public often means money. There was $4.3 million set aside for this, but the Northwoods isn't getting all of that. And how do you guarantee if the funding keeps coming in this direction?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And actually, this is something we fought for in the last budget process, because the governor had originally allocated $4.3 or $4.7 million in the Universal Service Fund. And during the budget process, that fund was recalculated. And it was we were under the impression that we were going to lose that money that was allocated for broadband. So I got together with some rural legislators, and we penned a letter to the co-chairs of Joint Finance, and we were able to restore that funding back into the broadband system, back up to the roughly $4.5 million. So it's $500,000 per year for the next 5 years. And what's interesting is, because I signed on with those 14 other legislators who now potentially become my competition when I'm trying to get that money up here to the 34th Assembly District. So it's my job as the local legislator to make sure that we get our fair share, or I'll be selfish in saying more than our fair share. As I travel the district, I mean, you go over to especially areas of, we talked about Florence, but even Forest County, you know, the Papa River and Leona and up in those areas, there just isn't any service up there. And the other thing I will mention is, and you touched on emergency services. Mm-hmm. That is a huge, huge factor where all this makes much more sense. And just recently in the legislature, we enacted a new provision where you can put communications antennas on local DNR towers, fire towers, and that type of thing. And that was to specifically help out those emergency services and any other thing that we can help out. So it's important to remember that this is an issue that should not be put on the back burner. This is something that needs to maintain a front burner status. And I think the state is willing to do that. I'm certainly willing to do that with my office, and Don has been a fantastic resource for me and the powers that be in the legislature in terms of making sure that this is forefront as a priority.
And Ken, let me jump in, and I want to just thank Representative Swearingen for fighting to get that funding restored. When the governor announced it at April at the PSC summit in Madison, and there were a room full of people, 150 people, he gave his address and he said that we're going to earmark this money. I have to tell you, there were silent cheers. I don't care what kind of a letter you have after your name, whether you're conservative or liberal, everybody thought that was the best thing that they heard. And then when we heard that it was potentially going to be lost, everybody just took a sigh and their shoulders sagged. So thank you for restoring that funding, Representative Swearingen. And now, as we said earlier, to do something with it. And the way to do it is to identify those communities that have the need, that will qualify with two or fewer providers. Some of them have already taken a step. In Florence, for example, they've got dark fiber in the ground. They were telling me, yeah, but it's dark. I said, but you've got fiber. Okay, it's already there. And so a community like that is a potential example. So every year we have to continue to keep fighting for it. The governor's clearly committed. The lieutenant governor, Tim and I know from talking with her in her office, is committed. So we've got the legislative branch, the executive branch, and now it really talks about working with a group sitting like around this table today who come down and hammer out solutions and come up with ideas to make that really work for us here in northern Wisconsin.
I had someone tell me one time that the solution to better broadband in northern Wisconsin is that there was no one solution, is that it's a mix of fiber, and does everyone agree with that or disagree?
Yeah, we called it the creative patchwork quilt of solutions. And and in the short term, you know what? In rural areas, we have to be at peace with that. Okay, everybody says, oh, fiber to the home, and that's a new acronym now, okay? Rob will tell you. Here in the Northwoods of Wisconsin or north of 29, you know what? If you can get good DSL right now and it serves your need, that's going to help you for the short term. If you can get over copper through your cable provider, that's going to help. If you get 3G or 4G for the towers that do have fiber to the tower through companies like Cellcom, that's your solution. So you're going to have a variety of these different solutions implemented on any town or on the, you know, in the tribal reservation, because it's just the way that it is right now. Someday we'll all have electricity and gas, as Rob was talking about earlier, but for right now it's going to be a combination. I think that's not a bad thing, Rob.
No, it's not. I think what you're going to find, though, is that obviously your core is going to be your fiber. If I put a tower up in the Northwoods, I need, and if I'm doing 4G out of that, you can have up to a 10 megabit, 20 megabit signal to your phone. That's a lot of power. The problem is if it only goes to the tower, it doesn't talk to anybody else. It's not much good. So we need to get from the tower back to my core network or to the internet, if you will. And in doing that, I'm going to need either fiber or I'm going to need microwave. Those are the big angles that will do it for me. If I'm able to take and get that core, but then you get, once I've got that out to covering a lot of the area, then my last mile, I may use coax for that, I might use copper wire for that, I might use microwave. It might be a Wi-Fi type derivative, and the Wi-Fi has got its own inherent problems. It's one of the problems it doesn't have is that you don't have too many people on Wi-Fi up here because there isn't that many people, so it works a little better in that sense. But there's a lot of different ways to skin the cat. You do need the core, though, and that's why the idea of putting some money into fiber, but doing it so that it's going to the optimal points that then can be spread using other technologies is the best way. That's in our approach. That's what we kind of look for. So, you know, if I were building fiber up here, and we are in many cases, but we're not obviously going to build all of it. I would look and say, gee, who are the people who would use it? Well, any cellular carrier is going to use it, and they're going to put a tower. So maybe I want to go down County Trunk G as opposed to County Trunk F, because on County Trunk G, there's a cell tower. Or I've talked to the cellular carrier, and they're looking at building one over there. Now I can provide service to that, and guess what? I've got an anchor tenant out there that I can now, you know, hopefully not charge too much money that I never built the tower in the first place, but, you know, I can charge a reasonable return for building the fiber in the first place. So I think fiber is the core, but beyond that, yes, it's absolutely a patchwork, and there's new technology being developed as we go.
And Rob touches on a key point, and it's one of the messages we've been bringing not only to individuals, but increasingly to the business community. There are people right now who, if they know, have to only run 500 feet of either cable, copper to their house so they can get, for example, in the town of Three Lakes, our provider, which is Carban TV Systems, another local provider, we have 24 megabits down, okay, which is really fast for a small community. People will pay $500 to run a piece of copper to their house to get that. But we're going into businesses and saying, think of this as a capital expenditure, just like a new computer, just like a new lathe or a computer-driven machine for your business. Think of investment in broadband technology as a capital expense. If it's going to cost $5,000 to run a piece of fiber into your place of business, and you can team up with a provider to bring you the service you need, think of that the same as investing in any other piece of capital equipment. And you know what? They look at it and say, we never thought of it that way. We were just sort of depending upon the providers to do that.
Don, when my grandfather helped start our phone company years and years ago, we started out as a local phone company. And what they would do is they would go to the farmers in the area and they'd say, you should have telephone service. And the farmers in the area would say, why do I need a phone? I get into town every Friday. I see the guys at the mill, and you know, we have the dance, and Sunday we're at church, and so I can do all my business. I've got that covered. But then, of course, some of the more aggressive farmers said, well, no, I do need it. But the telephone companies didn't build it. What they did is they went to the local farmer, and they said, okay, look, you're 10 miles out of town. It's going to cost X amount of dollars to build out to you. And the farmer said, okay, build it. And that farmer paid for the build out. Then his next door neighbor is sitting there going, wait a second, how come he's getting stuff delivered and things are happening at his farm, not at my? I want that service. And so what the phone company would do at that time is give half the money back to the original person that put that cable in, or that iron wire at the time, and collect that from the other person. And it, ultimately, the guy got his money back, and the line got built. But that's how it started. So the idea that you've got there is absolutely right on the money, is that work as a partnership. You can make it economical for the local cable company or the local business to get the service, and it's going to make a big difference.
I guess that brings up a question. You know, you can talk about all these things, but if the public doesn't buy them for whatever reason, is that done? I mean, is the public, luring the public to buy into these products, is that the critical element?
No, I don't think it's the critical element. It's not the only element, but it is a very important element. And part of it makes our representative's job a whole lot easier if his constituents recognize the value of it, so that then when he votes for something, they don't say, oh, get him out of here. You know, he's spending my money. You have to spend money. The question is, are you spending it wisely or foolishly? this is a wise investment, and it's something people have to understand as a wise investment, and then they can support. People know that politics is tough. It's a very fickle situation. You can have somebody who's done a fabulous job for umpteen years, and then because somebody did something goofy, all of a sudden they're out on the street. So it is a tough job, so we have to be supportive of them. We have to be very supportive of our representatives, of our town chairman, of our town, or everybody that's close, that this is important. It is vital to the survival of the rural America. And more importantly, it's growth. But its survival is really part of the answer right there if you don't have it.
And I think part of the public-private partnership really meets the needs of, in our Northwoods, we have a large senior citizen population, fixed income for those who may not have those the extra cash or the extra dollars to run fiber to their home or connection. So I think this type of grant funding really fits and meets the needs, whether it's children through education or through senior citizens. And we have to look at creative solutions outside and alongside. Yes, I think it's important. You need to spend or invest your own money. I mean, you won't find that in Green Bay, or you won't find that in Racine or wherever, and just more urban populations where we're being asked to invest in it and pay for it yourself. So this is the way I think some of that public-private monies could be used to really, if done carefully and structured enough, that really meets the needs of those citizens.
And Ken, to your question, Rob touched on something that we have to think about this on so many different levels in terms of legislation. Representative Swearengin and I were talking the other day about the need to go back and revisit existing legislation that may be 10 or 15 years old. It was appropriate at the time for where we were technologically, but times have changed. So that's one thing that we have to look at. Another thing we may have to look at is new legislation that makes it easier for this to happen. And so, being an elected official for the state of Wisconsin, whether in the Assembly or the Senate, there's 500 different topics in front of you at any given time. And so it's really impingent upon all of us who do this and who think about broadband all the time to bring those issues to our legislators and say, this is something we probably need to take a look at. And then their staff can go dig into it, and that helps the whole thing win as we go around and looking at that. It really is a cooperative collaboration on many different levels.
Well, we have a few minutes left, and other topics someone would like to bring up, Rob?
Yeah, real quickly, I just want to touch on the playbook real quickly, Don. Don was involved with the Public Service Commission through Link Wisconsin in creating the playbook for the state of Wisconsin, and the work that he's done in Three Lakes gives him tremendous credentials in that book. And there was hundreds.
What is the playbook? What's that?
And I'm going to let him explain that to you. But okay. This is how the playbook essentially is how we should keep moving forward with this issue. And that book will do us no good if we don't take advantage of it. And so if you could just touch on that, the book a little bit, and what the future holds in terms of broadband.
The Wisconsin Playbook for Broadband Progress was developed as an outgrowth of the Public Service Commission's Link Wisconsin initiative. The idea being that across the state there are different regions with different needs, and they should all coalesce in one place. And we called them plays. We thought about it as a football or a basketball game that legislators can use to create and modify legislation, that providers can use to work with the public sector and the private sector, that educators can use to bring the messages Tim was telling. So this all came together. There were about six primary authors, and I had the privilege of being one of those co-authors. It was subjected to peer review, went through a lot of different editing, and so it's now come out, was released by the governor at April at that PSC summit, and now is in the hands of all of these different bodies. It's a great operational tool to be able to go out and say, okay, let's use in this play in this region, let's go ahead and hold a regional area summit so that we can bring together key members of industry, key members of economic development, the provider community, the legislators, and how can we hammer out a solution. So thank you for bringing it up, Representative Swearengin. It's one of many key tools that we're using, not only at the state level, but bringing it right down to drill at the local level.
And it's actually being reviewed by other states across the nation as a model to take a look at for this very issue.
Do we, I guess from the private sector, I guess if you could put your crystal ball up, what's the private sector going to be doing in the next few years?
Well, we're going to be obviously looking at the biggest thing you're going to see is a move to what we call 4G. In the wireless side of the game, we're going to be looking at higher speeds all the time. We've seen a hockey PUC growth in data. It's just going through the roof. To your point, Tim, earlier you were talking about how people are starting to get on that highway, starting to learn it as the immigrants are. Well, I got news for you. Those immigrants are pretty smart because they're really going crazy. And so we are seeing that a tenfold increase on data usage on a cellular network. So we're going to be also seeing things like small cells. One of the things that will be happening is instead of a cell site on a tower, actually a supplement to the cell site on the tower, you'll actually be finding cell sites in your home. A little box, you put it right in your house, and it gives you 5 bars of service regardless of how many trees you got outside the place. And in the shopping mall or in the school, you'll have another one that'll cover the entire school, and that will be giving excellent quality service within the school. So when the high school sports is there and you've got 300 people watching the game, they can all make phone calls because you might have a couple of these small cells in there. Our company has been one of the leaders in the world on that particular technology. But now as we move to LTE, we're going to be finding that going even greater because we're expecting to see that by the year 2020, the data usage by people on a mobile network will be increased by not 100 times, but 1,000 times. 1,000 times capacity increase by the year 2020 wirelessly. So what does that then fall back to? It goes back to the concept of fiber. To get to those towers, to get to those small cells, and otherwise you're going to need to have higher speed connectivity to do that. And so we're looking at things like fiber optics. The dark fiber that's being buried today, as long as it's buried where it belongs. If it's buried in the wrong place, it stays dark. But if it's buried in the right places where there's some opportunities to pick some things up as it goes, that'll give us the bridge to the future. So I expect to see, to meet these tremendous data needs we have, we're going to see people taking a look and hopping on the fiber. Those two combinations of an LTE type of infrastructure for mobile and the fiber for the other, and then microwave to reach the places that need to, and then possibly another type of umbrella technology, which would be not an LTE, but just to fix to the home wireless technology. Those are the kind of things we're going to be seeing.
We have just a couple of minutes left. Tim, what are we going to be seeing from moving out education to people? What's on the horizon for that?
We locally here are reaching out to town governments. We're reaching out to, well, we've already been working with the Oneida County Board. We're starting to reach out to other county boards in the area as well to really help policymakers get it, to understand the applications of technology in their communities, and to begin getting them to the point where they can sit down with someone like Rob Reardon here and begin talking about partnership and cooperation. We're developing curricula. We're going out. We're doing demonstrations to help them understand what the internet is and how it works. So we use jelly beans and a PVC pipe to talk about data. That presentation gets good feedback. So we're hitting the road, Don and I, and we're talking to as many people as we can. And we hope to see more gadget kits getting out, more technology into the hands of more people.
And Ken, as a closing thought, first let me thank WXPR for broadcasting this, because I hope that our listeners, who are taxpayers, okay, understand that this is a issue that crosses many different boundaries: legislators, provider community, the business community, themselves individually, and it's not an easy nut to crack. But look at who's sitting around the table today. We've got a representative of the Lac-Da-Flambeau tribe. We've got a representative from a provider community, one of our state legislators, somebody from the education community. And it's really all about forming these huge collaborations to solve complex problems quickly. And, so if the listeners think about doing this, not just here in our studio, but in other parts of the state, that's what's really going to build the broadband capacity. And again, it's a means to an end. We're really talking about economic development and job growth. If we can put this high-speed internet highway into place in northern Wisconsin, we're going to have the ability to create a lot of jobs and to do a lot of good things and make people's lives better in every way.
Well, that's all the time we have, and I'd like to very much thank our panel this afternoon. And thanks to all of you for listening here to WXPR.